The sound of the opening bell on Wall Street Wednesday overshadowed by a virtual warning siren that the U.S. economy could be headed for a recession. The fears of a downturn spiked after a closely watched indicator called the yield curve flipped into what investors call an inversion. What is the yield curve? It measures the yields on U.S. Treasury bonds. And normally, the longer the term on the bond, the higher the yield. Another way of looking at it is to measure the difference in yield between the 2-year and the 10-year Treasury bonds. When the 10-year yield is below the 2-year yield, the spread is negative. And negative spreads seem to precede recessions.
22 states, including New York and California, and 7 cities sued the Trump administration to challenge a rollback of the Obama era's Clean Power Plan, which aimed to cut U.S. reliance on coal power. The lawsuit charges that the new Affordable Clean Energy, or ACE, rule, finalized in June, will prolong the operation of dirtier coal plants and obstruct states pursuing clean energy.
WeWork's parent company filed for an IPO Wednesday and, in doing so, revealed its financial standing. The We company statements disclosed its revenue grew fast, but so did its losses. The firm, which provides shared office spaces, saw its losses balloon to $700 million in the first half of this year. In that same period, its revenue more than doubled to over $1.5 billion. But We did not say when it expects to turn profitable. The company was valued at $47 billion in the private markets in January.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's August the 15th, and it's 5:11 in the morning now. Welcome to The Opening Bell. Thank you for tuning in today. We've put together a really good broadcast. We're going to try to hit as much of this business news that's breaking all around the world this morning as possible this morning. We'll check in on the markets, which in the U.S. have turned negative now after being positive in the futures market overnight after a rough day yesterday. It is also Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell, and we'll welcome in Dan Behrens in a minute. Dan is the Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group over at Associated Bank. Good conversation today. We expect about commercial real estate trends and market conditions here in the Chicago area coming up momentarily with Dan. A little bit later in the program, the number of female farmers up 27% in the last 5 years. Why is that? And we'll ask Virginia Harris, a demographer at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Statistics Service, coming up at about 5:38 this morning. So stay tuned for all of that coming up. But first, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning on Wall Street after a really bad day yesterday. The Dow suffered its worst daily percentage drop of the year, closing down 3%. The U.S. bond market flashed a warning signal that has been a forerunner of past recessions when the 10-year Treasury bond yield fell below the 2-year bond yield. The last time that happened was in 2007, right before the big financial crisis and recession. In addition, global markets uncertainty and the U.S.-China trade war are leading investors to sell stocks and move money into long-term U.S. bonds. When all was said and done yesterday, the Dow had dropped 800 points. The Nasdaq fell 242 points. The S&P had lost about 86 points. This morning, an implied open of about 91 points in the negative on the Dow, on the S&P, and Nasdaq lower as well. Nasdaq futures off nearly a third now. In Asia, markets also lower. In Japan by nearly 250 points, down nearly 1.25%. In China and Hong Kong, a little bit higher. The Hang Seng up 193 points, nearly 0.75%. And markets in Europe have turned negative now. The FTSE is now down 73 points, nearly 0.5% in London. In Germany, off nearly 100 points on the DAX, nearly 0.75%. In France, down nearly 0.75% as well. And the oil in the U.S. is at $54.39 a barrel. Why have we gone negative this morning? Well, this morning China says it will have to take countermeasures to the latest expected U.S. Tariffs. The Chinese government talking about this morning in response to the president's decision to slap duties on $300 billion worth of Chinese goods that was supposed to start September 1st, but has been delayed on some goods for a couple of months until December 15th. Laptops, cell phones, other consumer goods that have been delayed. Still others will go into effect on September 1st. and China is reacting to that this morning. We've also seen markets react to some news out of Hong Kong. The Hong Kong government announced plans to implement stimulus measures to help its sagging economy. The government also cut its forecast growth forecast to potentially flat for the rest of the year, down from already anemic just half percent growth it was expecting. So again, global growth worries impacting investors and impacting what investors' decisions are here in the United States and in Europe. We will continue to monitor that as we move forward this morning, but we have a couple of other headlines as well. The U.S. government is spending at record levels. The Treasury Department reported yesterday that the federal government has spent $3.7 trillion in the first 10 months of this year. That's the most since the Great Recession. It projects that if the current pace of the deficit continues, it'll reach $1 trillion in the final 2 months of this year. Economists are blaming increased spending by both parties in the 2017 and the 2017 tax cut for widening the federal deficit. The budget that passed 2 weeks ago added $1.4 trillion in discretionary spending. Supermarket chain Hy-Vee is looking into a possible data breach of its payment systems. The Iowa-based company says it detected unusual activity at some of its gas stations, coffee shops, store-run restaurants, and a few Wahlburgers locations. Customers have been asked to monitor their credit cards for unusual activity. You also heard in the opening montage, WeWork doubling its revenue in the first 6 months of the year, but the shared workspace provider lost almost $700 million. The public offering from WeWork is coming shortly in the next months or so. Let's begin this morning with Thought Leader Thursday. Dan Behrens is with us, Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
We welcome you to our cadre of thought leaders. Before we want to get into some of the meat of today's show, I want to have you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your background and what makes you a thought leader.
Sure. I've been at Associated for almost 6 years now. I've been in commercial real estate finance for about 17 years. Most of that is financial institutions, life insurance companies, all the way down to commercial or community banks in Chicago.
Your knowledge of commercial real estate is what we're going to draw on today. I know there's a lot of different trends happening. You keep your ear to the ground. That's probably how you hear most of your information, right?
Yeah, absolutely. My developers, owners keep me pretty well informed of what's happening in the market and all their different asset classes.
There is some news as we begin the show today, and we're still sort of going through it, but the city of Chicago has been wanting to put a casino in the city. And there was a consultant report that came out that said none of the five sites that were proposed are financially feasible. Of the five sites, Michael Reese was at the top. And even that, the report said the taxes are so onerous that an investor might not come in. What's at play here just generally, not necessarily from the casino standpoint, but what's happening with taxes that would cause something like this?
Well, to your point about the casinos, I mean, I think transportation is a big draw or would be a big indicator about the success of a casino in any of those locations that Mayor Lightfoot proposed. But the taxes, I mean, it's a very difficult topic right now because it's still a really relative unknown. No one knows what Fritz Kage is going to do with assessments. And I think the commercial real estate community is just hoping that he's not going to lay the majority of the burden on real estate tax or the real estate landlords. Commercial landlords, in particular, it's a large weight for a landlord to bear. Luckily, some asset classes they can pass that cost along to their tenants. But for a situation like this casino, I mean, there's no tenants to lay that off on. So that would be a very difficult proposition, and one that the consultancy realized this probably wouldn't be an ideal location.
With your wealth of experience in this, from an investment standpoint, what would need to change about that equation? Is this something that the city can change the tax structure? Is this something the state's going to have to deal with? But it would probably involve bringing down those taxes, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think like we mentioned before we went on air, there are different tax incentives that are really at the say state and county level that can make investment in a particular area worthwhile. We see a lot of that. There was a big discussion on tax incentives with Amazon's HQ2 when they were kicking around Chicago for a little bit, and a lot of the cities were offering very lucrative tax incentives. And I think the same thing can be done for a casino if the city's very serious about actually putting a casino in the city of Chicago.
So we'll stay tuned to see more developments on that. I want to get your views on where, if you had to give the local CRE market a report card, what would it be? Or how are we doing these days?
Right now, I think we're probably in an A-minus or a solid A kind of grade right now. I mean, you know, a lot of my developers are merchant developers, meaning they, you know, build and sell. There's a lot of liquidity in the market. So when these buildings are being built, a lot of them are being sold. When they're stabilized, some when they're, you know, during construction, and even some prior to putting a shovel on the ground. I mean, some condo projects, you know, it's not uncommon to sell out before, you know, a condo building is complete. Industrial is a very liquid asset class right now, so a lot of industrial developers are able to sell their buildings even before they start construction, which is it's a very impressive feat if the developer can secure a land site that really draws that much attention. But it's some asset classes are faring better than others. Everyone has an issue with retail. I think retail is in the right spots, still a very good asset class in the right locations. Industrial is very busy, and multifamily, obviously, in the city of Chicago is the strongest it's been in quite some time.
I like that assessment. It's a very positive one. I wonder if we don't hear much about a more detailed assessment like that, because all of these mega developments seem to be sucking in all of the attention, sucking in all of the air. I mean, that we hear so much about, whether it's this development on the north side or by the river. Is that the case? Is it just because these big deals are taking up so much of the attention, we don't hear about the health of the rest of the market?
I think so. I mean, the 78 planned by Related, and if Landmark Properties doing the development along the train tracks just west of Soldier Field, you have Sterling Bay doing Lincoln Yards. I mean, these are huge headline-grabbing generational projects that just happen to be all ongoing at the same time. I mean, I can't think of a time in and around Chicago when these kinds of developments have been taking place at the same time. I mean, you know, they're interesting. People want to know about them just because they affect so many people, because they're just the sheer size and the scope of the project. So they garner a lot of the attention, and as well they should. Just because of the size, the scope, the cost. I mean, when you see a Lincoln Yards is going to cost $6 billion, it's impressive. And people want to know where the money's coming from, how it's going to affect the neighbors, the area, the infrastructure, the transportation. So there's a lot of things that go into these larger developments that, you know, a smaller development's just not sexy enough to hit the front page of a paper.
Yeah, some of these big developments, I saw one story where they described it as a potentially historic transformation of these areas of town.
Well, what Sterling Bay plans to do along the river, I mean, the river's been blighted. Everyone who grew up in Chicago knows that would you ever eat a fish that you caught out of the Chicago River? So I think they're trying to beautify, and Mayor Emanuel did that with in the last administration, try to beautify the Riverwalk. And I think the river and the lake obviously are very big draws for the city, and if they can beautify the north branch of the river at the Lincoln Yards, that would be impressive. I mean, on the south branch of the river, you have the 78 that's being done as well. I mean, these are areas of the city that really deserve new development, and I think when they're fully built out and fully stabilized, they're going to be huge assets for the city.
And they're areas where, at least in the city center, that we're kind of running out of space to have big developments like this, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look around, there's not a lot of empty land left available. I mean, no one's making more land now. So the developers are pushing west, they're pushing north, and pushing south. And I think, you know, as we get back to the, just to touch back on the Michael Reese, I mean, that's where the development is moving south. So, I mean, eventually that land will be used for something, and it's exciting to watch what the developer's been doing to expand the CBD.
Back to the report card, the a good report card you've given the local market. There's still a little bit of concern, though, among investors, isn't there? Or at least we're seeing that creep up a little bit. What are you seeing there?
Investors are still skittish. I mean, they're nervous about the taxes, I think, is the major issue that an investor is going to point to. But I think there's a lot of healthy investment in the Chicago and the Midwest. I mean, cap rates are more attractive in the Midwest than the coasts. I mean, New York and L.A., San Francisco, I mean, the cap rates are so compressed that investors aren't getting the yield they want, but they'll still be able to find that in Chicago, even if taxes do take a bit of a jump. So, I mean, let's hope that cap rates continue to stay at attractive levels for institutional investment.
I know we had in the past talked about it, foreign investment being big in Chicago. Is that still the case, or is that money dried up a little?
No, there's still foreign investment. I think EB-5 is still something that developers, lenders, banks, everyone's still trying to get their head around it. I'm not certain that everyone fully understands the full EB-5 program. But, you know, sovereign wealth funds from overseas are still buying into, investing in lots of these larger developments around the city.
Something you said earlier about retail, let's go back to that. We've always seen these headlines about the retail apocalypse, but that's based on what you've said and what I've been reading. It's not really the case, right? Is there a better way to describe that? Because it's more of a transformation as opposed to a decimation, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely a transformation. I mean, it's hard for the average person to realize. I mean, if you drive down Michigan Avenue, I mean, Barney's just filed for Chapter 11, and you see the former Apple store is still vacant on Michigan Avenue, and that's Michigan and Huron. You have the old Saks Fifth Avenue men's store at Michigan and Superior that's still vacant. So those are big witnesses or identifiers for the average person to say retail's falling apart. But like I mentioned before we started, I have a lot of retail developers who are doing massive redevelopments. I think this city, mostly the country, has been over-retailed. There's too much retail, mm-hmm. and it's going to take a retail developer with some vision and some money that can redevelop, demolish some of the buildings. You know, that's what kind of the plan is for some of the dying regional malls that are around. They're going to demolish some of the possibly vacant anchor space and convert to, I've heard, projects for parkland and apartments, condominiums, mixed-use developments that'll really take away some of the retail space that in this age of e-commerce is really unnecessary.
And I've even seen there was a report in RE Journals about Cleveland. I know it's Cleveland, not Chicago, but it's sort of indicative of perhaps the suburban environment, especially where one of those big retail places goes away and it's replaced by a grocery store, a new grocery store, mm-hmm. or even a home improvement store. Those two sectors that are doing, especially home improvement, doing pretty well. Is that what you're seeing too? And again, in the suburbs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have, I think, three projects going on right now that are in the northern and northwest suburbs that are redevelopments that are going to be grocery anchored shopping centers, and which is still a very liquid asset class. We talked about outside investment. If you want to buy retail, you want to buy grocery anchored shopping centers, and there are new grocery chains that are actually coming into the market. Haven't been announced yet, but it's very interesting, very intriguing. So I think when the new retail landscape is finalized, it'll be much more sustainable for the future.
A good indication of whether or not you're going to be a great thought leader is the ability to tease us. And you've just done that, I think, with this grocery chains that have not yet announced. Any more you can say about that or no?
No, unfortunately okay. not.
Well,
sorry.
Stay tuned for that.
Confidentiality agreements.
Yeah. But it is positive. I think there's this notion that people don't go to the grocery store anymore is crazy. I mean, every time I'm at the grocery store, it's packed.
The grocery store is still obviously a staple for everybody's household. Mm-hmm. I think the rise in delivered groceries is increasing, but we're not there yet. I mean, I think we as Americans are slow to change. I believe in the UK, the concept of delivered groceries is much more prevalent. But people still enjoy going to the grocery store. I mean, there's something that people like about it, and people don't want to change their routine, even though it's full and the parking lots are full. But that's something that's going to evolve over time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's certainly not going to be an overnight change that all of a sudden, if you've been going to your local Jewel or Mariano's or Whole Foods and going there once a week getting your groceries, you're not going to all of a sudden stop next week and start ordering online. It's just not going to happen.
Should we be concerned about the architecture business slowing down?
I don't think so. I mean, that's kind of a tough question. I'm not all that in tune to the architecture market. I think it's a data point. I read the same thing, I believe, was in Cranes that they talked about architecture building was down. I think that's a single data point. What I can tell you is that my developers are continuing to develop. I mean, I see their pipeline that's coming 12 months, 18 months, 24 months down the road, and it's still a full pipeline. There's still a lot of work that all these developers have planned in and around Chicago, the Midwest, is where we usually play.
You know, the report said billings for some of the big architectural firms down for the down or flat for the last 5 months. Dan, I want to give you the opportunity to let people know how they can get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want.
Sure, absolutely. They can call me at my office, 312-544-4657, or email me, daniel.barons@associatedbank.com. That's 312-544-4657 was the phone number. And Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, .barons, B-A-R-R-I-N-S, @associatedbank.com.
Dan, it's great meeting you. Thanks for sharing your knowledge with us this morning, and come back and see us.
Will do. Thanks, Steve, for having me.
Dan Barron, Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank, our thought leader today. We do these thought leader conversations every Thursday here in the Opening Bell. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations over at WGNradio.com and head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to read more about our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the Opening Bell. There are more women farmers than ever, but let's talk a little bit about why that is. Some numbers out from recent studies show a big jump in just the last 5 years alone. Virginia Harris is with us this morning. Virginia is a demographer at the United States Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Virginia, we're happy to have you with us this morning. Good morning.
Thanks, Steve. I was happy to be able to come on this morning and talk to you about women farmers.
This is a huge story. I saw this a couple of weeks ago and immediately started asking, well, what's going on differently than 5 years or 10 years ago? And maybe you're the person to answer that question.
I hope I can provide some insight. Well, just a couple of numbers from the 2017 census. We counted 1.2 million women involved on U.S. farms. That's women on over half the farms. There are a couple of reasons for that. After every census, we go back and look and see what we did. And we received feedback from our data users that they thought we weren't fully representing the role of women on farms. So one of the things we did is look at how we captured that on the questionnaire, and we made some modifications. And when we did that, we were able to count 27% more women than we did in the last census cycle in 2012.
There's more than just numbers happening here, though, isn't there? Are there trends to go along with these stats?
Well, we first started counting women on farms in 1978, and in basically every census cycle since then, we've counted more women. The one exception was in 2012, where we saw a small decrease. So the number of women has been basically increasing since we first counted them in 1978.
Yeah, in 1978, the numbers were pretty low, weren't they?
Yes. Back in 1978, though, however, we only captured demographics for one person per farm. And what our data users have told us is when we capture only one person per farm, we tend to get someone who's older and someone who's male. Well, but that doesn't fully represent everyone who's involved in making decisions for farms.
Right. So it goes back to that co-operator, another operator there on the farm.
Yes, exactly. Most farms, the majority of farms, have two or more people involved in operating the farm.
So, Virginia, talk to us a little bit about what farms we're talking about here. What are all of these new women farmers farming?
Well, farms with women, the top commodity specialization for farms with women are farms involved in growing beef, producing beef cattle. That's true for farms overall. Women are involved in all kinds of commodity production, from beef cattle to hay farming to grains and oil seeds, fruits and vegetables. There's no category of farming where you don't find women farmers.
Are most of the farms smaller farms or bigger farms?
Well, on average, we can say that farms with women producers tend to have lower sales and have less acres in farming. They operate fewer acres than farms that have male producers on average.
I know I saw a report recently that went along with these statistics that said women may be earning less as they do in the regular world. We've had many conversations about this inequity. Does that also exist in farming?
Well, one of the things that's important to realize about the census data is the census covers a wide variety of agriculture, from those that may just have a few head of cattle and aren't relying on the farm for their whole family income, to those who have multi-million dollar operations. So most farms overall have sales of less than $10,000. Women are, farms with women look a lot like that.
Right. Now that you see all of this data, how does the USDA use all of this? How do we process all of this information moving forward?
Well, I think one of the things the data shows is when you're reaching out to farm producers, don't focus just on one person. You know, you need to realize there's many people involved in making decisions, and be inclusive in your outreach. You know, think about all the different kinds of people. It's not just men and women, it's young producers, it's people who have just started in farming. So that's one of the beauties of the census data. It tells us a lot about the people who are operating the farms and some of, you know, basic characteristics about them.
Yeah, and does this change, or has this impacted at all the sort of outreach that USDA does to farmers?
Well, we hope the everyone who looks at the census data becomes more aware of the people who are involved in farming, and that they know who their customers are, so they can better serve each and every one of them.
I'm curious as to whether or not there are different challenges for women farmers and farm operations operated by women. Is that the case, or is it pretty much the same as men farmers?
You're getting outside my area of expertise. I'm pretty much a numbers person. So what we do in the census is we collect general characteristics. There are lots of other parts of the USDA that look specifically at the challenges people face, particularly if they're trying to, you know, apply for programs or loans or get involved in any other departmental programs.
So talk to us a little bit more about the numbers. Anything from the census, anything more surprise you? What have you seen that you might like to get more information about?
Well, one of the things that we do when we first publish the census is we just publish basically the general numbers. We're really excited. On October 1st, we're going to be releasing our race, ethnicity, and gender profiles, which will provide a little more insight on farm producers. And one of the groups that we'll be featuring is women producers. So there we'll look at net income. So how much money are women making from farming? So we have our basic data out now, but we're really looking to explore in more depth, you know, some of those questions, like what kinds of, you know, how are women doing economically on the farms? in terms of, you know, not just the gross receipts, but, you know, how much money they're making from the farms.
As we look at the chart that comes along with the census, the trend, as we've talked about, is going up. Do you foresee it continuing to climb in the coming years as well?
We hope so. You know, one of the things that we measure on the census is how many people are entering farming. So we hope the future leads to, you know, more men and women entering farming in each and every census cycle. Over the last 5 years, we saw 200,000 women have started farming. So we hope that, you know, we get more women in each census cycle that we count.
Very good. Well, Virginia, we appreciate you coming on this morning and sharing some of this data with us. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you.
Virginia Harris, demographer at the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, will link out to some of the findings from this census that shows the increase in women farmers of 27% in just 5 years.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we're watching futures decline significantly this morning. Looks like it might be another rough day for investors. Dow futures are off 184 points now, nearly 0.75%. After yesterday's big 800-point drop, some concerns, ongoing concerns this morning about global growth, and China this morning threatening countermeasures if U.S. Tariff hikes go forward. S&P futures off more than 0.5%. NASDAQ futures off nearly 1.25% now this morning. Markets lower in Europe and mixed in Asia. Let's get the update now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look back at yesterday's livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle futures, the big performer yesterday, with the August contract up the limit $6.75 at $134.47. The October live cattle contract, on the other hand, down 42 cents for the day, and that put it at $98.50. The lean hog contract for October up $2.30, ending the day at $66.77. Both live cattle and fed cattle contracts posted sharp losses on Monday and Tuesday as the market assessed the impact of a fire at meat processor Tyson Foods plant in Kansas. Then looking at the grain market yesterday, well, wheat managed to end higher. It was up 3 cents. But December corn was down 5.5 cents a bushel. November soybeans down 10.5 cents a bushel. Today, three state fairs still underway in the Midwest, the Illinois State Fair, the Indiana State Fair, and the Iowa State Fair, all continuing through Sunday of this week. And then about the only one we have left, really, is the Minnesota State Fair, getting underway August 22nd in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And, of course, this month, August 22 through 25, Half Century of Progress show, and that'll be at Rantoul, Illinois. Max will be there all 3 days, and Max and I will be on stage Saturday at 3 to 4 p.m. We hope you will stop by and say hello. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of more business headlines before we leave you this morning. Tiffany & Company is launching its first comprehensive jewelry collection for men in October as the upscale chain taps into a trend popularized by the likes of Jay-Z and John Mayer. The move is part of the Tiffany strategy to attract millennials and pump up sales, which have been dampened by a decline in spending by international tourists. Historically, Tiffany's has offered classic men's accessories like money clips, cufflinks, rings, and conservative jewelry. Also this morning, we're learning a key House committee has subpoenaed the owner of 8chan, the online message board favored by violent white nationalists, including a man suspected of killing 22 people in the El Paso mass shooting. Homeland Security Committee Chairman Bernie Thompson and the panel's top Republican announced the subpoena yesterday, saying it's at least three acts of deadly white supremacist extremism violence linked to 8chan in the last 6 months that's pressing forward on this committee to call for hearings. Virgin Galactic plans to provide the first glimpse of its headquarters as it looks to launch paying customers into space. Company officials say they will show off mission control, a prep area for pilots, and a lounge for space tourists at a remote facility in the New Mexico desert called Spaceport America. Virgin Galactic spaceship development has taken far longer than expected and had a major setback when its experimental craft broke apart and killed the co-pilot in 2014. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Thursday, August the 15th. Retail sales for July lead off a loaded lineup of economic reports today. Retail analysts forecast a gain of 0.3%. Also today, the weekly look at first-time claims for unemployment benefits is out. Economists expect to see 215,000 Americans filing initial claims, 6,000 more than last week. Industrial production figures for July also coming today. The experts forecast a 0.1% improvement over June. Business inventories for June are due out. The forecast calls for a 0.2% increase over May. So that's big news there, along with some big retail earnings, by the way. We should mention Alibaba, JCPenney, Walmart, and NVIDIA all reporting quarterly earnings today. So lots of things that could move the markets on this Thursday, August the 15th.